This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs and My Lotto rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up! The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
What does motion sound like? With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
Hello, and welcome back to the 90 Day Fiancé Rehab-Up Podcast. We're talking about 90 Day Fiancé The Other Way, episode 17, just chugging along, learning more about the lives of these couples who are living in countries far and wide from the United States. It's always a hot mess express, and I'm your conductor and host today, Puya Zanvakili. And as always, I have someone here with me, my co-conductor, ready to go through it all. We've got Jason Reed back once again. Jason, how are you doing, man?
Man, I'm doing great. Ready to get on the Hot Mess Express, a.k.a. the Mother Boy Motorcade, a.k.a. Dysfunction Junction, a.k.a. Sheep Slaughterhouse. Let's
do it. That's my favorite one. Sheep Slaughterhouse is the other one. Yeah, honestly, I'm very excited to talk about this episode. I feel like, so let me know what you think with regards to The Other Way now having the same length episodes as Happily Ever After, because for me, Happily Ever After should never have been an hour and a half. It was too long. Nothing was happening in them. I don't feel time going by as slowly with The Other Way.
Yeah, I was hesitant when I saw that The Other Way was regular episode length, 2 hours. And I was like, oh, my God. But this episode, like, because Happily Ever After does have a lot of filler in it.
Mm-hmm.
But there's episodes like this that a lot actually happened where, you know, I was fine with it being, you know, that amount of time.
Yeah.
So I feel like a lot happened this episode.
I do feel like it could be the other thing could be that the fact that the first like half of the season was only 45 minutes. Now there's just way more content to pack in. Whereas before, like you mentioned, they were all an hour and a half from the beginning. So by like episode 8, we were done. There was really like nothing new that they could give us that would be captivating for almost an entire 2 hours. But there's a lot of captivating stuff here. There's a lot to talk about. The only couple we will not be talking about at length today is Cheese Stick and Melisa. So before we go into picking which couple to talk about, I want you to give us your takes on them thus far, since you're not going to get a chance to today.
Boy, my guy Cheese Stick, man. They're showing us the other side of the coin, which is interesting to me. Before this, it was all about what Tim did, Tim. Now we're getting what Melisa did, which, in my opinion, you know, Tim's trying to flip it as in this is just as bad as what I did, which in my opinion is not as bad as what he did, because, you know, at least according to her, they were not seeing each other anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but that's her side. So I'm wondering, because they had to have been in contact still that whole time. So maybe he was getting missed signals or whatever. But I just don't think it's that big of a deal that she was seeing people casually while they were broken up.
Yeah, I do think that it's weird, because I think his whole thing is, I sacrificed everything to come here. And for me to find out that your record wasn't like 100% clean means that there was a betrayal there. But obviously the debate of, you know, were they on a break? Were they not on a break? It really lends itself to
the Ross. We were on a break.
Exactly. And I do think that despite whatever he wants to say, I don't think she's completely guilt free, but there is no way in any world that the two of them are comparable. And
at
they're
the
like,
very least, mm-hmm. She could have told him before he got on a plane.
Right, right. That would have probably been the one thing. But even I'm intrigued, because then would he have not done this? Is that the thing? Is he in regret of, I moved here for you? If I knew this, I wouldn't have left. Maybe there's something.
But would she have cared? I still don't feel like she really cares whether or not this relationship moves forward or not.
Yeah, low key. This is the second couple of the bunch from the other way season that I feel like they're not really there for the relationship. They're there for the money. They're there for the popularity, for the public eye, for the clout. So I'm not, the jury's not completely out on my lease. I'm not ready to say that 100% she doesn't want to be with him, but it's starting to kind of feel that way.
Yeah. So just her attitude the whole time just doesn't seem like she's really that into it.
Yeah.
Well, you know, she's saying the right things, but her body language and her attitude about it, I don't think it. And Tim seems like just desperate to like stay with her.
Yeah. I mean, like the next time on with them has her passive aggressively walking away from his mom and like spending the night with her family, which is, to me, we haven't seen enough of that episode to speak on it completely, but it just seems like you're not trying. Right. And I think that's the biggest thing for me is that if you don't really care, then why are you wasting your time, our time, his time? Like, you don't, why are you doing this to yourself if you don't want to be with him? Why are you going through this agony? And there's only one logical answer. Money. Hello.
Right. I mean, we're still talking about a transgression from what, a year ago? Like,
right.
It felt like they were digging this up just for just to get on the show.
Yeah. Cause I mean, like I'm not going to be one to be like, the wound could be big and it could be a thing to deal with, but also I can't, like, I don't know. I don't know. It's their own thing to decide. We'll just have to be on the journey with them to see what happens. Yeah, but now that we've talked about the couple that we're not going to see again for the rest of this episode, which couple do you want to sink your teeth into first here?
Let's get the little uncomfortableness of Jenny and Smith out of the way, like, real quick.
Okay. Well, you're definitely starting this because I don't want to talk about the opening scene. So it's all.
Oh, my gosh. Like, that was super uncomfortable. Like, I was like, oh, my God. Like, we had a great night last night. I was like, oh, my goodness. Don't need to know. And then Submit makes it even worse. She's like, you know, she's dominating. I'm like, okay, don't need to know this much. Like, I don't understand why we need to know that at all, but
right, I
didn't know that much.
By no means are we a podcast that kink shames, and you do what you want to do. Oh, sure. It's all for you, right? However, Liana made this joke while we were watching this together, and I genuinely in the back of my mind, I'm like, are they contractually obligated? Each couple has to at least talk about their sex life at least once or twice, because I feel like this conversation was kind of a slow burn. It's kind of like in Big Brother when they have to set up the, remember when this happened for the recap of the recap? It was kind of like, yeah, so are you comfortable after last night? Like, how did you feel?
Well, how was last night for you?
Yeah. I was like, okay, I got what you were implying. Okay. I get it. But also I did it. It was interesting to me because it seemed like it was like, Sumit stood up for me. So this was his reward, which I'm like, well, not feeling great about that. And like, here's the thing, right? So it was so good that Jenny decides I'm going to give him a ring that I bought for him earlier. I feel like now he's earned it. Now's the time to do so. What were your thoughts on the way Sumit received this ring?
I had a couple of different thoughts about it. First of all, he should have just accepted it and be like, cool, great, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
But I do understand that he wants it to be at a special time. But again, my feelings on Submit have changed once again. I'm back on the side of he's kind of doing this for ulterior motives, like the whole relationship with Jenny I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I now feel like he's doing this just to piss off his parents.
Oh, you think it's like a spite thing now?
Yeah, because like in that scene with his parents, what was it, in an episode or two episodes ago, he was so mad at them for forcing him to get married, and he just seems to really resent them. So I think it's about pissing them off and kind of going against what they say just to kind of punish them for doing this to him. So
interesting.
I think he is still extending this out, the whole relationship with Jenny, because now he definitely has lesser excuses now that his divorce is out of the way for real now.
Mm-hmm.
But he's still going to say, I think, that he needs 100% approval from his parents where he moves on. Like, he got like a little approval. Like, they were like, all right, well, we're not really cool with this, but he's like, no, I need them to be cool with it. And I think he's going to extend this to when Jenny's visa runs out. She's going to have to leave. And then I think he's going to ghost her. And I think his parents, you know, he'll say enough's enough with his parents' punishment, and he'll be back under their roof.
This is
That's what I think.
Interesting to me, because honestly, I feel like outside of Kenny and Armando, Sumit and Jenny are the other couple where I'm like, I feel like they really want to be together. And here's why. So I totally hear what you're saying, but then I feel like in that vein, it would be more similar to like the Britney story where now that Britney's free, she's like, well, I'm not fixing to do this. I'm not trying to like go to Jordan. But with him, I feel like he's actively throwing himself into the lion's den every chance he gets. So he's like, okay, I'm going to go talk to my ex's like ex-in-laws because I have to deal with this. I'm going to go talk to my parents and have the uncomfortable conversation. I'm going to go talk to my dad again in the next episode. So it's like, I think that once all of it is clear, once the smoke is clear, once the divorce is done, the parents approve, that's the true test of, because I think he even thinks it's such a long shot that he's going through with this. What happens when all the barriers are removed? Is he going to be as psyched, or is that when reality sets in and he gets a little bit nervous about like, oh my God, I love her, but I did not think this was ever going to happen. I have to commit my life to her now. Oh my God, I didn't think like, so for me, it's like, does he think that is not going to happen? And that's what's been making him lead the charge so boldly because he's just going to give it a good old shot. Or is he in a position where what you're saying is happening, where he's doing this to spite them and then he's going to let Jenny go? Because it would be ruthless. Like, I think Sumit to me is a redeeming character. It would be so flipping ruthless if what you're saying is actually the case, where she's going to leave and he's just going to pretend he never spoke to her again.
Yeah, I think that's the case. I think he, you know, he's got this catfish, you know, he was catfishing her to begin with.
I forget about that. Yeah.
He then, like, once he got her on the hook, like, she won't let go of the hook. So he's like, you know what? I can use this. Like, I can make my parents mad. I can, you know, do all this. And still, he's still getting benefits out of it because, you know, as I said in the episode, they're living off her Social Security. So, like, he doesn't have to work, like, which is probably similar to what is going on with his parent situation. Probably lived with his parents, didn't really have to do much, maybe had a small job. But I think he's still living off, you know, someone else. I think that's what he's looking for. And I think if he can piss his parents off at the same time and be like a rebel against society, which he, you know, is obviously against what a lot of his society does and thinks, I think all the better for him.
Yeah, I feel like you're giving Sumit a lot of credit. I don't think Sumit has the stones to be able to pull off a maneuver like this at all. Just because, like, I see that, like, his parents were always pushy, always controlling. He likes to be controlled in the bedroom. I think he's in his element. This is where he likes to be. He likes to be in a position where someone who is a little bit more older, a little bit more in charge, is taking the reins. And this is where he thrives. So, to me, for him, that role reversal to happen and for him to be like, I'm putting the boots to you and I'm lying, I'm messing with my parents and my ex can go away and Jenny to hell with you. It's way too much beyond his control. I don't think he's capable, but I will say, big plot twist if it happens, and that would be incredible. So here's the thing, right? So in this episode, we talk about all that stuff. He pushes back on the ring. He wants the ring ceremony to be a legitimate thing. And then the next scene we get from him, he's telling us about how his ex-wife has charged, you know, put criminal charges against him for mental torture, physical torture. And then we find out that this is basically a thing that happens to try and squeeze more money out of a case, and that she wants $500 per month as maintenance. Now, all of this said, we'll get to him going to the court and stuff, but we find out that essentially their entire living arrangement is being financed by Jenny's Social Security. So when that reminded me that we have not seen this man working since the early days of the last season where he was working at the call center. So what is he doing with his time? Are they just at home all the time?
I think they're just chilling. Like, that's a big thing that is in this show the other way. Like, the American coming over to the foreign like country wants to stay like with their significant other like all the time. Like, I don't want you going anywhere. Like, we'll just live off of my stuff. Like, we got the same thing with Ari and Baby. Like, mm-hmm. She doesn't want him going anywhere. And I would imagine being an American in a foreign country where you know no one, that's, you know, if you can afford it, if you can just chill all day with your significant other, like, that's probably what you want to do rather than staying in the house all alone doing nothing because you
right. Yeah, and like, that's the thing, right, is that the whole thing with these long distance relationships coming The person moving is like, well, I'm moving so we no longer have to be long distance. I would like for us not to have that. And I do think that it's intriguing to me because in this instance, Sumit does live in is from India, should be. She keeps saying that there's a limit to how much money we're going to be getting. So I'm surprised that that conversation hasn't come up on the storyline yet of, hey, Sumit, when are you going to start working? Because I bet you anything, once Jenny gets him to have this divorce be done, once Jenny has penned a paper, married him, the next conversation is going to be, so where are you going to go work? Because that money's going to run out. They can't just be eating chicken off a hot plate every night. There's no way. The hot plate's going to run out of electricity at some point.
Yeah, they seem really up against it financial-wise because, like, when he mentioned the $500 a month, she's like, oh, no, like, we cannot do that. Like, that's impossible. Like, so it sounds like they don't have a lot of discretionary income.
Mm-hmm.
So I would think sooner rather than later, that's going to be an issue because just much like these other couples on this show, there's not a lot of planning that you feel is involved. Like it feels like they're like, okay, well, this is fine, but they don't think about any other incidentals that might come their way.
Yeah, I will say, I like their apartment. Their apartment looks, it's looking day and night different than when they initially painted that wall salmon pink. It actually looks nice. I like the furniture. It's a good setup. It looks spacious. So that's great. That's all good. However, ultimately, are they going to be able to overcome this? Because we find out, so he goes to the court with his friend Rohit. Everything's sorted. They get all the charges dropped, which is great. The divorce still needs to happen. But we find out that he still needs to pay the second half of that money. That $10,000 still needs to happen. And I imagine his family, his dad is going to be paying that amount by the sounds of it. So that conversation that they're going to have next week, I think half of it is have to do with like, hey, so I want to marry Jenny, but also you're still going to pay the $10,000, right? That's still happening.
I do kind of wonder if the dad takes that opportunity to be like, you know what, if you want to do this, then you're going to have to provide for yourself and pay this second half yourself.
I mean, that's the power move, right? I know that they would. Here's the thing. I think the dad needs to realize we're not going to get everything we want here. I'm either going to be out money and he's going to marry her, or I can save myself money by giving him my blessing if he pays it off. Because if he's going to want to be with her no matter what, he's either going to lose money or he's going to have money. So it just comes down to, is he trying to give Sumit the tough love test of, hey, if you really love her, if you really want to commit to her, show me you want to by, you know, pulling up your pants and just going out there and making this second half of the money. But then obviously, if he does that, I think strategically he should realize that, oh, that definitely means Jenny has to leave because her visa will expire. So. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. Like, you want to be a big boy, then take care of your big boy, you know.
Oh, yeah, we'll get to big boy and bad boy because that happened as well with another couple we'll talk about. But yeah, ultimately, I'm left intrigued with Jenny and Sumit. What's their storyline going to be? Because like their storyline started strong, got weak, and then got strong again, got intriguing. Now that there's some progression with the court stuff, I'm happy because we're not in a position similar to Melisa and Tim where literally it's the same story every week. They're actively moving from one scene to another scene. Oh, he talked with the parents. Oh, he went to court. Oh, they're talking about a ring. So there's more going on here that I'm excited to see. So I hope we see them again next week properly with more storyline because it's hard to get good storyline out of some of these couples.
Yeah, for sure. So in your mind, you think we're leading toward a ring ceremony?
I mean, here's the thing, right? I think we're leaning more towards ring ceremony, but if I had to guess that ring ceremony is happening this season, I would say no. I think that we're going to end the season with either we're on the brink of her getting the divorce sorted, or it's going to be like, I might have to move. And that's when the season ends. And I think we're seeing them one more season on the other way. So I think that the main part of their storyline, we're going to get cliffhangered on if I have a vision on it.
Okay.
Yeah. But until then, until next week, we'll have to keep speculating on that. Okay, now it's my turn to pick the next couple for us to segue into. And we can go many different ways. There's still a couple. There's a bunch of storylines here. But let's go with one of the shorter ones. Let's go with the Devin and Jihoon storyline, a.k.a. Devin and the bad boy, as we come to learn. So this whole storyline, this whole week, the theme was, hi, I'm Devin, and I'm going to judge everything Ji-hoon is doing, and I'm going to criticize everything Ji-hoon is doing because I don't think he's doing it right. So she clearly has trust issues with what he used to do with his work with the stolen phones and has decided, you know what? It's take your wife to work day. And Ji-hoon wants none of this. He's embarrassed. He hates this. And we learn why. So his new job, and feel free, Jason, to let me know if I've interpreted this correctly. So his new job is
using the word job loosely for
right. Exactly. So his money making scheme is he buys phones that are, you know, secondhand, broken, like they might have some kind of tech issue, software issue, whatever. He buys them. I guess he makes them be working condition and then he resells them.
I'm not sure he's even doing that. I literally think he's just taking these broken phones, probably for pennies on the dollar, and going, like, I could go to downtown Baltimore right now and find somebody selling these phones to me. Like, hey, right. You need a phone? Like, I got a phone for you right here, $50, you know, whatever, blah, blah, blah. Got a cracked screen, got a crack, whatever, but it's, you know, $50 for an iPhone, whatever. But, you know, Ji-hoon may not be selling stolen phones anymore, which still isn't up for debate, but he's definitely still selling them to the same criminals he used to be dealing with, I think.
Yeah, I feel like it's a step in the similar direction where he's not selling the stolen phones. He's buying phones and then he's selling them to the degenerates, basically.
Like, I think Devin thinks that he is a employee of this store,
which I did too until I realized what was happening.
Yeah, I think this is just one of many stores that Ji-hoon goes to and is like, hey, what crap did you get traded in, you know, to your place? I'll buy whatever you got and I'll flip it on the street.
Yeah. And I think that so the whole thing, because like, I think in the first season we saw him, it seemed like he knows what he's doing on a tech side of things. So he's either like unlocking locked phones to contracts and stuff, or rooting phones so that, you know, the app stores, everything's free. You can just download everything illegally. No issue. I think he is able to do some of that kind of stuff. So maybe that's what he's doing with them. I did like Devin trying to make sense of like, hey, so why can't you just learn how to repair them and then sell them? Because you'd make more money, which he's on point with. If he gets an iPhone for like next to nothing, let's say if $100, and then he fixes the camera, he can sell that baby for $600. And then that's a good spot for him to be in. But I do think that ultimately for him, it's he is worried for her to come to work because, yeah, he's a straight up customer at that store. He's just a valued customer and a returning customer. So they know who he is.
Yeah, and here's the thing, like, he's very relatable in this moment, because even though it's not his workplace, it's still basically a place he comes to a lot. Like, it's kind of like if your, like, mom or your girlfriend or your wife comes to your job, like, starts embarrassing you, saying, like, crazy stuff. Like, can you not? Like, can you just chill out? Like,
yeah, well, and the other thing for me is that I was, like, a little spooked when we got the confessional from the store owner, who's like, yeah, I was surprised to hear that Ji-hoon used to sell stolen phones. I was like, oh no, his boss is going to be mad. And that's when I realized, oh, he doesn't really mind because it has nothing to do with him. He's going to make his money regardless in a few scenes.
She totally blew up his spot. Like, it's like, really? Come on. Like, why would you come and tell my quote unquote boss that I was a thief? Like, that doesn't make any sense.
I mean, that's
the you thing. Want me to lose the job and not work anymore?
Right.
Like, her whole thing made me get this job.
Her whole thing is like, yeah, she's pushing him to become a man and like work and like do all the things right. So why would you put his job at risk? Because even if he fully disclosed it, you don't want to like make it seem like you have no trust in him. And this is not a good being like, so yeah, so he used to sell stolen phones. These aren't stolen, are they? Talk about insulting the family as well, insulting the owner as well, right? Of like accusing him of stealing phones. Like, this is just a lose-lose spot for you to make it seem like, hey, we don't trust you.
Yeah, the fact that he really like scoffed at the idea of him fixing the phones kind of tells me that he's just straight up selling these phones. I think probably the store owner may like unlock the phone and then he can go sell them, maybe give the owner a cut. But you know, that kind of tells you he's not really on the tech side of things. He's just flipping a phone, doing the dirty work.
So. Right. Yeah. Well, because for me, the way I think about it, it's kind of like if you buy, so you can buy like a, what are they called? It's like a,
liquid.
Yeah, you can buy like a liquidation box from Amazon where like it's a bunch of, it's a mystery box. It's like $100 and it's filled with stuff that people returned and didn't keep. And you can get anything from like, let's say socks in there to like some kind of electronics, some like little gadgets and stuff. But then you can try and resale value that for like double the money if you're, you know, if you get lucky. So I think it's the same way where it's like he's buying like three phones for $380 or four phones for $380. And then he's going to try and sell them for like $580 and make a little bit more money. So it's like it's a slower scheme, but it's like it takes money to make money. And you got to know where to sell them, which I imagine he does because he's been in the business before.
Yeah, I think he knows who to go to try and sell maybe some phones that can't be tracked, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. And that, like, again, I said, like, that's what I think he's capable of is unlocking phones, jailbreaking phones so that they're just easily accessible to any apps and anything and stuff like that on that side is kind of the vibe I got when he was doing the stolen phone stuff. But hopefully he doesn't get thrown into debt again because he had to pay that big fine last time.
I think probably legally he's maybe covered since he bought them from an official store.
Right. So if anything, it's the store that'll get heat on it. Right. If anything was to happen. So then the whole thing now with Devin, aside from grilling her husband on his employment, is she wants a dream wedding that she's had in mind. Like they're married on paper and she wants a proper ceremony, a proper reception, all the fixins that come with it. But can you talk me through this whole story? Because my thing is, if you want a specific wedding, why are you letting your in-laws make the decisions?
Well, yeah, I feel like this came out of nowhere. Like, Oh, you want a dream wedding? Like, first of all, like, where do you think you are? Moldova? Like,
not everyone can be.
Right. So, and again, we play our favorite game on this show. Like, do you know what Google is? Like, you just do some research into weddings in, you know, Korea, you would see that, you know, more often than not, these are the type of things that you're going to get, like, quick, in a hurry, 1 hour. That's it. And yeah, so we hear all of a sudden that she wants a dream wedding, but she's done nothing to make that happen. All the in-laws have done every single thing. And, you know, she's upset that she can't plan anything. I was like, you know, then say something. And she does. But I didn't think the wedding place was that bad, to be honest with you.
See, I found the wedding place looked fine. The arena looked fine. Everything looked fine. The fact that she thought it was a runway when it was clearly an aisle, I was like, have you not seen any wedding ever on any movie even? So,
yeah, like it's a big aisle. Like,
yeah. The thing that was jarring to me was that there were lockers. I was like, are we at a gym? Like, this feels weird. Like, why are there lockers? Decorations,
if you want to decorate the room or something, that was my take. Because why else would you need lockers?
I mean, I assumed it was for the suits and the dresses is so that when you come in, you could just change and go do it and then leave. Because like, I don't think there's any. I think the decorations are off a menu. That's like when they talked about getting the VIP package. I imagine that that's where they're going to just get everything decided for them. And I think that's why she didn't like it, because it was way more cookie cutter than she liked. I think she had a vision of, oh, I want to go look at bouquet options. I want to go look at like menu options. It seemed like this was a, hey, you have an hour and we have these like five preset menu items. Which one would you like to order and what time do you want? Because and I liked Jihoon's thing of like, well, Koreans are pretty busy. We don't have time for more than 1 hour. I don't know what you do in America, but we don't roll like that. We're like, honestly, as far as that goes, like I feel like if I want to have something with family involved, I want the ceremony and the reception. I want the whole shebang. But if I'm doing a quick, like we're doing a small ceremony with like us and like maybe one parent, two parents and like a friend, then yeah, give me the quick one because we don't need a whole like ceremony. Because like this seems like a weird middle ground to me. This kind of ceremony of like it's 1 hour, but it's got like some razzle dazzle to it. And we've got like everything prepared for you. It doesn't feel like I don't know. It doesn't feel like a proper wedding because I feel like an hour is just not enough to have family there too. And also 11 a.m. is probably the worst. I got to imagine they were like the last people to order their wedding.
Yeah. But I feel like you can really, like, what was the plan? Were we going to ship her whole family over from Utah to Korea? Like, I feel like the norm for these type of things, as we saw in Happily Ever After with Audrey and Libby, is to like do two ceremonies, one in your country and the other in the foreign country, because I think it'd probably be easier for you to just go over to your to America, do a wedding there where your family already is, instead of having one side of your family come all the way over from America to Korea.
And his do I remember this correctly, he's been to the States, so he is not one of the couples that has no access or entry to the States. He can go.
That was weird. I mean, and you could still make this work. You could have the reception there. I mean, the ceremony there, and just go somewhere else for the reception if she really wants a big shebang like that. Mm-hmm. She may have to pay. The parents may not want to pay for a separate reception, but she could probably make it work with, you know, whatever money she has.
Yeah. No, I feel like it could definitely be arranged because, again, I do think some of these segments with Devin, it's like you're setting yourself up to fail so that you can blame him and his family and get mad. Because if you are picturing and planning your own wedding, there is no way you're like, yeah, mom and dad, you guys set it up. I'll just show up. Like, that's not a thing. Especially, and then, cause then you're playing the shocked value of like, well, this isn't what I want. It's like, well, then did you not tell them what you want? And they just went ahead and did this without you, because it's a pretty big deal. If your mind, the wedding is going to be a full 24-hour event. And in his mind, it's an hour. That means the conversation did not take place there for the expectations to be laid down.
Well, it seemed like they had no conversation because he seemed really surprised that she wanted like a dance, like she wanted just anything other than nothing. Like, did y'all have any conversation before this? Like, what is happening?
Yeah. And I like that the compromise when they were starting to talk about, we're like, well, he's like, well, we don't do that here. That's not a thing. She's like, well, I need at least one dance. And that dance is me, the father of the bride, and me. And then you and Drusilla, that needs to be a dance. And I was like, can we please get the footage of Jihoon and Drusilla dancing? Because I don't think that's going to go as well.
Chasing Drusilla around the dance floor.
Yeah.
She can't stand still for 1 second.
Oh, yeah. And her mom will not have any of that. If you don't think that while this dance is happening, her mom is looking at Jihoon like a hawk. Like, yeah, that's not going to fly. Yeah, it's interesting because I don't know. I mean, I know where they're going to end up. And let me tell you, it's not pretty. But within the eyes of the show, where is this going? Like, next week, we're told that they're going to have that big cheating conversation that has been teased since we came back from the mid-season break. So, I don't know what the storyline is after that. I don't know if then we're going to move on from the wedding conversations completely or not. But what's your prediction here?
I think they want us to believe on the show that things are going to go well. I think this is a classic bait and switch with the whole cheating thing. I think it's going to be all for naught, basically a filler episode for them. Because we do still have the untied, you know, loop of, you know, the COVID times with them in the apartment in Korea.
Right, right. Yeah, now that's still supposed to show up. Yeah, I feel like they're, for some reason, they're still one of the couples with the most footage and the most content, because they pretty much, whenever they're on the episode, they're like given primary or secondary priority on you're getting most of the cuts, you're getting most of the cut scenes. Whereas some of the other couples, they're either like the fourth most important storyline or they're just not there that week.
Yeah, so, maybe like two scenes from them or something.
Right. So I'm intrigued with what's going to happen with this conversation, mainly because I want to see Jihoon's confessionals and what he makes of what's going on here. So also, I would just like to say, I'm happy that the egg has not made a return. I'm happy that we don't need it anymore. And I'm overall more satisfied with the way the communication's been going since. But that's just a quick aside, because I know that some people were like, stop talking about the egg. Well, luckily we haven't had to. So
why do you think that is, though? Like, have they just started like developing their own type of back and forth communication?
I mean, I feel like with time, they've just been able to understand each other. Right. It's like, it's not like
shorthand.
Yeah, it's not like she is starting to know better what words will Ji-hoon understand. And I think he's starting to adapt and learn, okay, I can say these things and it'll mean this thing. It's just getting more and more smooth. And also, I think the added fact that they're having probably less heavy conversations than before. Like before, it was like, I need you to know I'm going to leave you if you don't do A, B, C, and D. And it's important for you to know A, B, C, and D. Whereas now it's like, did you pick up the laundry? Like, it's not that deep. She'll be able to convey that message, and he'll be able to interpret that message without needing a tertiary item, perhaps.
It's situations like that that make me, like, wonder about, you know, what life is like on an ordinary basis where we're not having drama. Like, what do they talk about? How do they talk to each other just about random stuff?
Right. Like, what's their daily conflictless living? Because I feel like we haven't really seen them without conflict from the jump.
Yeah, this feels like it'd be quiet in the house. Like, they don't have any, if they're not fighting, they don't have anything to talk about.
Right. Like, they're doing their own thing when the cameras aren't on. I could actually see that, you know, because it doesn't seem like she's, you know, I feel like, well, it's funny because I feel like, you know, both of them think of themselves as like fashionistas. So maybe that's their big shared bond is, hey,
that was hilarious.
Yeah, have you checked the latest in style? Like,
hey, so did you see my Vanity Fair anywhere?
Yeah. Oh man. Okay. All right. So that's about it on Devin and June for now. We talked about what's going to come next week of them. Where would you like to take this journey to next?
Let's pass a transitor egg over to Kenny and Armando.
Oh yeah, they are going to need it. Take it away.
This guy, Kenny, man, like, he's like, you know what? It might be an issue if I don't know Spanish. Hey, my guy, do you think so? Like, this just dawned on you now?
I like that he said, I thought I could skate by. Really? Really?
Like, you're going to have a daughter that speaks no English. Like, I understand that he probably wants to chain Armando to him, like, at all times, just to carry him around. Like, what'd he say? What'd she say? What'd he say? That's going to get old real fast.
I haven't gathered what their dynamics meant to be. I haven't gathered if now, like, are they just living off, like, is Kenny just are they living off Kenny's money? And is that just going to be unlimited? Like, he's fine
in real estate. I think that's what they said.
That's okay. That sounds familiar.
Maybe he has like apartments or something in Florida, and he's going to keep getting income from that.
Mm-hmm.
That's my thought. Like, he can be a landlord from anywhere.
That's fair. Like, it's a shout if he doesn't need to leave the house, right? Of like, oh, well, I don't need it. But even then, you're going to get bored at some point. You're going to want to go out. You're going to want to go buy something. If you want to make a surprise dinner, you have to be able to get the ingredients. You got to be like, hey, can you buy like two things of asparagus and like 2 pounds of chicken and, you know, some of these sauces and, oh yeah, lettuce and croutons. But for no reason, like, you want to be able to do all that stuff. So the fact that he doesn't have a baseline is nuts to me. And then,
let alone if there's an emergency where Armando is not, you know, there for him and he's like stranded somewhere, like, mm-hmm. What is he going to do then?
Right. It's going to be a struggle. And it's, and like, it's just, this is going to be very strenuous for the relationship. And I'm glad that Armando's talking about it with us, because it does feel like between the not being able to fend for himself, needing to have everything translated, and then having to play as interpreter between his husband and his daughter is probably not great, because it's just going to get irritating. And we saw a little bit more of the irritation there. But here's the good news. Hannah is delightful. Hannah loves her new room. She has her own room. And Hannah's now my breakout star of this show. I love
Hannah. She's the redeeming quality of this show. The issue's going to come if, you know, Kenny tries to convince Armando to be a little more strict.
Because, mm-hmm.
you know, she doesn't have that. She basically gets whatever she wants, according to Armando and Kenny. But if you start, like, cute can turn to mad real quick.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Big time. Big, big, big time. Because
right now, she's the best character on the show.
Yes. And I loved the shakedown of Armando. Like, hey, would you rather buy me shaved ice or a purse?
Because those are your choice. Options. You're lucky I'm not making you buy both.
Right. And I like that. It was like, I'm buying you the, when he said, okay, you can, if you behave, you can have ice cream. And then she responded, what about the, where are we at on the purse though? Like, like, what about that purse though? Is that, is there a chance we can have both? Is that a
thing? Can we negotiate?
Right.
What if I'm real good?
Here's the thing. There's not much to be frustrated about with this couple until we get to the language problems again with Kenny and Kenny wanting the full role of co-pilot, but in a chain of command where I tell you what to do and then you tell it to Hannah, not a, I'm going to help mold Hannah by your side by speaking to Hannah myself and establishing that relationship myself. It's just not a good combo.
One, it's just like, again, with the whole planning thing, like, what did you think was going to happen? Like, and it's so easy to, there's so many things now to help you learn Spanish, which is one of the easier languages to learn. Mm-hmm. It's kind of baffling that he did not, like, he didn't know what, he didn't know mucho gusto, like the other episode. Like, that's a super basic word in Spanish.
Right.
My 11-year-old daughter right now can tell you what that is.
I've never been in a, never lived in a country, I mean, until now, where anyone would speak Spanish. And even I knew what it meant. Like, it's right. Not that deep. It's so easy to pick up. And like you said, I think there's a lot more, you know, for all, one of the listeners did send me a tweet once and said that the translator egg is just simply the best thing for that dialect for translating purposes. With Spanish, there's so much you could do. Google Translate is probably very well optimized for it. Duolingo, if you're trying to learn the language, is relatively great for quick, easy lessons a day. So there is no excuse for this. And quite frankly, moving into a country, well, first of all, this conversation came up twice, Jason. The first time it came up, he was like, well, it's very obvious which one of us needs to learn the language. She's younger. It's like, bro, you're living in a Spanish-speaking country, so I don't care how old she is. She'll pick up English easily as she's growing up, probably because of you anyways. You need the lessons. And then later it comes up that, well, you have all this free time on your hand. Learn the language. So here's what I want to predict. I don't think Kenny's going to learn Spanish. I don't. It doesn't seem like he's interested. It doesn't seem like he's going to put in the work on it. And I think that by the time we get to the reunion, he would have not picked it up.
Probably not. You think he's probably going to say, like, oh, I'll just try to convert Hannah to English. Like, that's just what I'll do. Like, we're going to see segments of him, like, trying to teach her English words. Like, that's what I think. Is whatever he has to do for him to not learn something new, which is, like, crazy to me. Like, dude, just put in the work if you care. Like, this is where you're going to be living. You need to be able to do things without Armando. Like, that just has to be what it is.
Yeah. Like, Armando's probably the most sympathetic character for me in all of 90 Day the Other Way, because Armando had to deal with his family accepting him. Armando had to deal with his family dealing with the fact that they're going to lose Hannah. Armando had to deal with his dad not being approving of his relationship and his lifestyle. Armando had to be someone who has to, you know, miss out on being with his daughter for so long and now finally getting her back, has to deal with the anxiety of, like, will my partner fit in and everything. And now Armando has to also be the translator between his husband and his son, daughter. And it's just a whole struggle for Armando. At some point, someone needs to take some stuff off his plate because there's just too much there right now.
It's between his husband and everybody they come in contact with. Like, mm-hmm. That's got to be really frustrating to be, like, having to translate every single thing anyone ever says. And my thing about Armando is I'm definitely sympathetic to Armando. Mm-hmm. I'm also sympathetic to Armando's family, because mm-hmm. I feel like how long has this been? I would say 2 weeks since we started following them.
Mm-hmm.
If you come to me and my family one day and say, hey, I'm leaving, like, tomorrow. Like, what? You're doing what? Like, it has to be a whirlwind for them. And obviously, the fact that they're not accepting just his sexual orientation is definitely mm-hmm. a problem in and of itself. But just, I'm going to pick up my daughter. We're going to leave now with this man that you never met.
Yeah, my big struggle is that, you know, I just don't find that Kenny is also really embracing the culture in any way. Like, it's not only a language, but he's like, oh, I don't like eating this. What is that? I don't know. And he's making faces. And like, I understand that he is at, you know, at an age, at a time point, or whatever you want to call it, where he's just, he likes what he likes and that's it. But that doesn't lend itself to confidence to the family or anybody of like, okay, well, he doesn't seem to be interested at all. So there's a little bit of the, like, the stank face of like, I'm not into it, where that to me is worrisome. So again, that to me makes me more worried for Armando. Again, let it be known, the fact that we're harping on his not learning the language, this is me nitpicking, because I do think that Kenny's probably one of the better partners on this show than most of these other couples. Okay, so I think
The Kenny and Armando segments are really like a palate cleanser to most of these episodes. Yes. Like, oh my God, I can't believe this person did that. Oh, look, there's Kenny and Armando. I mean, they relax for a minute.
Right. And can we talk about probably my favorite segment on the entire episode, which was Kenny finding a baby in a box.
Is that a baby?
And then the editors did this. The next scene, we saw they were walking through the market and Kenny kind of pauses and then looks underneath another table looking for another baby. And I just thought that was priceless editing. It really was.
Is that a common thing here? Like, is there a baby under every table?
Yeah.
Are they, man, for sale?
So silly. But no, I also liked, because the whole thing with the parenting problem that showed up was that Kenny was upset that Armando is just getting shaken down by Hannah and buying her ice cream. I loved Armando's reply of, hey, it's a hot summer's day, and why can't a little girl get some ice cream? She's deserved it. She earned it. She's out here with us. She's not really caused us any problems. And I was like, fair game. Like, that's completely fair to me. I don't think that's out of order.
For sure. It was very reasonable. It was Armando basically saying, like, admitting to the fact that, oh, yeah, I spoil her. Like, you know, I give her everything she wants.
Right.
That's what tells me that the fact that she asked for these things, like, that's what a kid does. Like, they ask for things and it's up to the parent to be like, yes or no. Like,
right.
This comes with the territory with a kid. They're going to be asking for her stuff all the time.
Right. And at some point, if you don't want to get them something, you just put your foot down. They might not like it, but what are they going to do? Get the thing anyway? That's not going to happen.
Right, yeah, the fact that Armando told us that he spoils her is what tells me that he does it. Not the fact that she just asked for something, but yeah, right. Like, you know, and again, this is probably something they may have talked about it. Like, hey, you know, just so you know, I'm like not really that strict of a parent. And they've probably had this conversation like, well, yeah, I am. So we're going to have to figure that out.
Mm. Well, yeah, I think that it's been made very clear that they're going to have different styles of communication and different thought patterns. I think very clearly Armando's the more forgiving and understanding of the two, in that he will, like, if someone is even to blame for something, he'll probably be like, well, let's give him the benefit of the doubt, right? Kenny's like, no, very clearly they're in the wrong. They need to apologize. Like, I do see them having that kind of dynamic.
Well, yeah, we saw that at Armando's parents' house, where, you know, Armando was, you know, making not excuses, but giving reasons for the things that were happening. And Kenny was like, oh no, well, that's not how that's supposed to go.
Right. Well, Kenny was like, I'm not happy that your dad didn't stick around to talk, but he's like, no, but understand that the fact that he was even here is a good thing. The fact that he was even here and said hello, that's a big plus. So I do think that I understand their relationship and I get it. Ultimately, my thing with them is that it's just, honestly, the solution's simple. Kenny needs to, well, because the other thing is, I think Kenny needs to also understand that, hey, Hannah's in a new environment now. We've just moved her away from her entire family ecosystem. So the move is going to be hard on her, even though she's stoked on her own room. None of the cousins are here. None of the family's here. So let her have an extra ice cream cone for now. It's okay.
Oh, yeah. You've just taken this girl on an emotional roller coaster. Like,
yeah.
Like last episode when she was leaving her family, like, you can tell she was happy with Kenny and, you know, Armando, but then she was also heartbroken. She's going to have to leave her family. Like, that's huge for a girl her age.
Yeah.
She's going to be there in that house with no one but Kenny and Armando. Like, that's going to be a huge difference.
Yeah, it's not an easy thing to just overcome overnight at all. I mean, as adults, when I moved here, I was like, whoa. Even though I'm happy to be here, happy to have made the leap. But even the first week, I was a bit like, in shambles because, you know, it's a whole new environment to get used to. It's a whole new, like, you're coming to terms with the move. So imagine being, what, 20 years younger. It's like, yeah, an ice cream cone would be delightful right about now. So, yeah, I don't hold anything against Hannah or Armando there. And I think Kenny, again, not crapping on him. I just think that Kenny's gone through the rodeo a bunch of times. That was the other thing. Kenny has adult children. So Kenny has been through the raising part, and I think he thinks he knows all the solutions, which is going to be a clash for them moving forward, because this is, if I remember correctly, this is Armando's only child. So Armando's actively going through the first attempt and the first raising of a daughter. So they're going to have clashes moving forward. There's just no two ways about it. And given that they have different styles and Kenny self-proclaimed, you know, more of a drill sergeant, it's going to be problematic, but I think they'll balance each other out, which is actually a great thing.
Yeah. And Kenny and Armando are one, like, I don't want to say the only couple, but it might be the only couple where I can like see like their love, like that they love each other, like hard.
Right. Yeah. And I see that too. I agree. And I think that they're going to work out. They're going to be just fine. Okay. So before we go on to the next couple, let's take a quick break and we'll be right back.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
And we're back. And that means it's time to talk about another couple here. Now, the question is, do I want to talk about a couple that makes me mad or a couple that makes me mad? Because I'm going to stay mad here, but I'll go. Let's see. Let's get out the couple that is just agitating to talk about at this point. More so, I want to talk about Brittany and Yasin real quick. And I say real quick because pretty much it was the same segment twice in the span of an hour and a half with them. So we start off the scene with Brittany is coming back to Florida because, and I'm quoting, "I miss my dad and my dog, Max." Okay. And her whole thing, Jason, is I need Yasin to show that he's independent by getting our own place and getting my plane ticket back. And then we get a shot of Yasin. Yasin now is driving a taxi and working at a salon as a barber. So can you walk me through a little bit? Because it's been a minute. Can you walk me through your feelings and thoughts on Yasin and Brittany since we've last spoken?
Oh, boy. Yasin and Brittany. So Yasin has fallen for a thirst trap. And he is drowning in the thirst quenching waters. That's what this is. Like, he's now so head over heels that he is forsaking his family, forsaking everything. And it's still not enough for Brittany, which is insane. She's basically telling him, you know, you have to not only leave your family, you have to fully support us, which is hard for him because I would imagine leaving, you know, kind of leaving your family that way kind of makes you a social outcast in that community, I would think.
Right. And I think that's exactly what's happening. I think that because the other big thing she's saying, so aside from the fact that she wants him to get his own place for the two of them and he finances the plane ticket, which, by the way, he does both those things. She wants, when she moves there, her ultimatum to him is she wants him to tell his family that they're moving in together and that they are not going to get married right away and that she is not going to convert, which I think that her idea is if he does this, he proves to me that he's about us and not about his family, pleasing his family. Here's the sad fact, though, for her. I'm like 90% sure that Yasin wants his bride to be, his relationship with Brittany to be of marital status, and he wants her to convert because those are his personal beliefs, irregardless of what his parents think.
Right. So, she doesn't get the fact that he believes this stuff as well. Like, he's not just doing it to please his parents.
Right.
Because that's what he believes and that's what he wants. He's already told her this.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen him tell her this, like, my wife is going to be Muslim. Like, if you want to be my wife, you will be Muslim.
Right. And like, I think the part that he was more okay with is not getting married right away. I think that was forced from the family. So I get that. If he pushes back on that, that's fine. But I do think the conversion thing, which he keeps acting like it's been inceptioned into him, is just his beliefs too, that independent of his parents, he will also be sharing and continuing with. So the continuity of like, he needs to prove this. He needs to show that he's away from his parents. He needs to show that he's a man, that he's doing his own thing. Like, even when he was telling her that, hey, I've changed a lot about myself and I've been working 14 hours a day, she just seems like she doesn't care at all.
And she wants all these things. He's already pretty much done that. Like, he has exiled himself from his family for her.
Mm-hmm.
Like, well, and, like, you want him to get a third and fourth job to fully support you over there?
Right. And like, her thing was like, well, I'm not asking him for shopping sprees or anything. He should consider it lucky that I'm not asking him for that, because that's a whole other thing. And I was like, okay, well, Brittany, I get all this, but also understand that you've already, like, you're seeing big changes in your man from when you were in Jordan last time. So the fact that you're seeing these changes, shouldn't that be proof that it's going in the direction you want it to? My whole thing is what I alluded to earlier with the fact that I feel differently with Sumit and Jenny, and that Brittany, now we found out in the second scene we got from her when she was wearing her bikini upside down with her friend, that her divorce is final. So it's like, okay, she's free now. I think now that the divorce is final, she feels like she was tied down to this man for so long. That's gone. She no longer needs anyone to, quote, rescue her from a bad relationship. And I think she's realizing that this isn't what I need. This isn't what I want. But how am I going to curve him without completely ghosting him, because I don't want to be looking like that type of girl? And I think that's what we're seeing now, where she's putting irreversible resolutions on him, and then it's going to go to Jordan, and then it's going to be like, well, nope, this isn't what I signed up for, and it's going to dip.
Yeah, she wants it to be his fault.
Right.
The other thing, like, the thing about them this whole season is just, like, I don't know what the production schedule is for them, but it seems like the camera crew leaves them, like, for long portions of time, and then big things happen while the camera crew is not there.
Right, because I do think that's that
is like, oh yeah, I'm homeless now. Like, I got in a fight with my family and I'm homeless. Like, what? When did that happen?
Yeah, no, he went from being good with the family to getting kicked out, like completely kicked out, to homeless. And now he has a place. To now this episode, he has two jobs and he's been working solidly 14 hours a day for God knows how long. So, and he's made enough money to both keep rent, survive, and send Brittany plane money. That's a long way from being homeless. And yeah,
Well, in this episode, like, when she gets to the beach, like, last episode we saw, I was like, oh yeah, this is gonna take a while for this divorce to get finalized.
Mm-hmm.
And then this episode is like, yeah, it's done. Like, wait, what?
Yeah, so my big thing is, are we gonna end up, so two questions, right? When is the season ending? Is it ending soon? Because then this makes sense that it's all wrapping up. Or are they going to go the Paul and Karini way of things, where they're going to wrap up next episode and we're never going to hear from them again? Like,
yeah.
How far away are we from that finale?
I feel like we're not far, because from what I can remember from, like, season long previews, like, we've gotten a lot of stuff. And then The other things I feel like we haven't seen, we should get in the next couple episodes.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I do think that we're in episode 17 now. I cannot imagine. I just cannot imagine we're going to go beyond like 24, right? Like, Surely not. But we'll have to wait and see on that. I do think that for me, I have never rooted against the couple more than these two. I could tell that we're not made for each other from very early on. And just these scenes agitate me, because the other thing is, I also disagree with some of Yazan's stuff, obviously. Like, I think Yazan being like, well, you shouldn't be dressing this way, and getting all jealous about someone catcalling. I was like, Yazan, come on, man. Like, he has some opinions that I don't really share, but also I can see that he is at the very least bending over backwards and changing parts of his life that he can afford to keep this relationship. Whereas Brittany went from being like, yeah, I'll convert. Yeah, I'll do anything your family says to no. Now you have to do tequila shots with me in front of your dad so that your dad, you know, gets mad at you. Like, it's like, what do you try? What else does he need to do short of like literally, like, I can't even imagine what's the next thing he needs to do for her to like be with him. It just doesn't seem like, I think she set him up to fail and there's just no other way to look at it. And
well, she's trying to push him to that edge where it's like, you know, that's it. This is over. Cause that's, she's not going to stop until she gets to that point.
Right. And I think it's either it gets to that point where he ends it or she can completely pin it on his family and be like, well, I wanted to be happy with him, but his family won't let us. And it's sad and I'm crying and it's awful. So yeah. Brittany, forget you. Okay. Nothing else. Yeah.
There's never been anyone more like that. I'm convinced is doing this just like solely for the TV show, solely for the money, solely for the clout. Like that's all this is. Like she never had any interest in this guy. Mm-hmm. She just needed a guy that was in a foreign country.
Right. And here's the thing, right? I was about to say, like, well, what's it's 90 Day Fiancé? Where is the clout? But the truth is, these TLC shows do have hella viewers. And the people that end up on these shows have hella followers. So
it really is like an income based on cameo alone.
Yeah. Yeah. So she's definitely secure. Let me quickly open up her Instagram and see how she's doing money wise or followers wise, because I do think it's, yeah, there we go. Well, first of all, her thing is her name on Instagram is Brittany 90 Day Fiance. So, you know, she's using this for the followers. Interestingly enough, she has two followers that I know. One of them's Liana. So Liana, we're going to talk. But she only has three posts. I guess she's deleted a bunch, but she has 400,000 followers. So yeah, definitely.
Do it for.
Yeah.
She definitely didn't have that following with her, you know, whack rap career before all this.
I don't think. I mean, at best, she would have had probably, well, let's say 50, 60K, right? At best. So yeah, the show definitely has pushed her where she wanted to go. And I feel bad for her. I feel bad for him. I feel bad for everyone involved. I feel bad for us having to watch them. But
I wonder where that line is of we're following you for fun and then we're going to stop following you because you're a horrible monster.
Right. I don't know. I really don't know. I don't know where the bottom. That's the thing. I don't follow on Instagram. So I don't really follow many of the reality TV people I watch because I'm like, you're not going to give me what I was there for initially. So that's not for me. But yeah, is there anything else you want to talk about with regards to Brittany and Yazan here before we proceed?
I just really was really crazy when she was talking to him on the phone and she was like, I'm so proud of you. Like, why would you be proud of him for basically getting himself kicked out of his house, losing his job, losing his family? Like,
right. Because the thing is, it's not like he was a deadbeat living off his, like, I know he was working with his dad, right? He was working with his dad and getting money there. But ultimately, I don't think it was that deep. Like, I think he was still making an honest living. He was still like, he was actively working for that money. So I think her thing is she is convinced her narrative again, her, the way she sees him is he has been living his under his parents' rule based on his parents' decisions and he was trapped. Whereas I think what really has been the case is he is family oriented and just likes, like, he's a family guy. So I don't see it the way she sees it. But I will say to you real quick, Jason, she's had a decent following from like August. So she's definitely gained up, like, in the last month, she's gained about 18 to 20K. But she's got a bit of a following from before, too. So if anything, yeah, surprisingly enough, I can't like dive deeper into these stats for some reason. It's not letting me see beyond like past like August, but no, it seems like she's been doing relatively decent on the follower front. But again, like followers are one thing. Getting endorsements, getting sponsorships, all that comes from being on the show. So
yeah, you can get a lot of followers just from being hot. So
that's also true. These are the facts. So the next time on with them is essentially her flying back to Jordan. So we'll see what happens when she gets there. I imagine it's going to be a fits of uncomfortable and sad. So we'll just have to wait and see what happens then.
Yeah, I'm just waiting for the someone's going to murder him scene and see what that's all about.
That's all I've cared about for weeks now with them, because I want to see what that conversation is she has with one of his friends and what comes from that. Because it doesn't seem like, you know, as much as we talk about her side being a little bit scripted, a little bit following the clout, I don't think that the scenes with Yazan are overly dramatic and they're just for show. I genuinely am worried about what's going on.
Yeah. Brittany has played this like a TV show, where not realizing that this is his life, like that she's messing with. This isn't a TV show. This is his life.
Right. 100%. Okay. Last couple on this here list. Jason, walk us through, start us off with the Ari and Binium storyline.
Ooh. So we're coming home from the hospital. You know, and again, Ari and Binium are like not planners. You know, we've seen that. We need to get baby stuff. We don't have a car seat. We talk about what we're going to do when we get in the car. You're going to walk with the baby and I'm going to take the car. He's like, okay, sure. And then we get down to the car and he tries to sneak in the back seat.
Mm-hmm.
That was hilarious. Like, mm-hmm. like, okay, yeah, I hear you. Like, I'm just going to slip back here and see if you notice or not.
Yeah.
Like, no. Start walking.
That had me dead, man. That genuinely had me dead, because her whole thing is, we don't have a car seat, therefore not safe, therefore you can't do this. And I loved his argument of like, but this is how we kick it in Ethiopia. This is how we do it. It's like, well, just because this is what you do doesn't mean that it's necessarily safer here than it would be in the United States. But I also couldn't decide whose side I was on. I mean, I got her safety first thing, but I also understood what he was saying low key. And I understood to a lesser extent that, yes, he could trip. It is hot. What if the baby's sweating? Like,
that was ridiculous.
Yeah.
I felt like, you know, it's like when my wife asked me to take the trash out while I'm watching like Monday Night Football. I'm like, you want me to go out there in the dark? I could get mugged out there.
Right. Like, who knows what's going to happen, right? So I felt like, especially if the drive was short, I personally would have leaned to like just let the car thing happen. But also, I understand her frustrations, because I do feel like Binium kind of doesn't think a lot of these things through and kind of just flies by the seat of his pants. Just like,
I didn't really give him a lot of grief for this, because it's really like car seats are really like an American thing. Like, it's been ingrained in us, like, you need a car seat. You can't do anything without a car seat. But in a lot of these other countries, like, that's not a really big thing. They have them available. You can get them. Like, for instance, like, in the Kenny Armando scenes, mm-hmm. when they were driving the car with Hannah. She didn't have a car seat. She didn't have a booster seat. Nothing.
But, Jason, Hannah's not a week old.
I get it. But she's still a kid. Like, she's safer. The baby is safer in Binium's arms than Hannah is just chilling in the back seat. Like, what if you get in a car accident? Binium's got the baby. Like, they're not sitting the baby down on the back seat. Like, all right, baby, you just chill right there. Like,
yeah, I did have my worries about the trip to the house. But here's the thing. Again, like, Binium's not going to get out of this easy for me, because then we get into the welcome home party that was a surprise, that was unannounced, that she pulled up to without Binium there to explain, because she kicked him out of the car. And then it's like, okay, she just had to go through a pregnancy, a C-section. Oh, sorry, I said a week old. The baby's like a day old.
4 days old.
Yeah. And then she's had to go through all this stuff. She's in pain. She's just like had a kid. And we're going to slaughter a sheep in front of her.
Oh my gosh. That was so, like, she took it a lot better than I would. Like, I'd be over in the corner, like, singing Mary Had a Little Lamb, like, rock myself back and forth, like, after witnessing a sheep get, like, slaughtered in front of me. Like, too much.
Yeah, no, it was too much. It was like, I come from a background where I have heard of this happening, like it's good faith, it's good luck, whatever you want to call it. I personally could not see this up close and be fine. I would have been queasy. I would have been a shell of a person. So to get blindsided like that, I don't love that. I do not love that whatsoever. Now, she takes it like a champ, basically, and then she has to deal with the whole family basically getting her and asking her and telling her, hey, when's the baptism? Are you getting the kid baptized? Is that happening? And Binyam explains, like, hey, so we went and talked about this, and they told us that she has to convert as well, or she has to get baptized too. And the answer, like, nah, we'll override that. Like, what do you mean? You have permission? You have final say?
What is a priest know?
Yeah. Religion? It's like, no. We'll waive the fee. We'll waive the baptism on her. The kid can get baptized. Yeah, I'm starting to change my tune on Binyam a little bit. Like, cause I think up until the baby being born, I was on his side. But now that the baby's born, I can see them low key trying to steamroll her into just accepting things a certain way of like, yeah, no, we're getting the kid baptized. And yeah, we're getting it. We're also, the circumcision is not going to be on your terms. And you know, it's hard, right? Cause it's her first child. She's the mother of the baby. She has no other blood relatives in the country. For more reasons than one, she's going to want to keep this baby close. And I can't imagine how hard it is for her to watch everyone try and have a say in how to raise this kid.
But like, coming home from the hospital, like, it felt like a bad sitcom. Like,
yeah,
what else could go wrong? Like, we don't have a car seat. Like, I come home, oh, time to take a rest. Oh, we have the whole family here chanting while I'm trying to rest and breastfeed my child while everyone's standing there staring at me and talking to me about stuff while I have a fresh wound from my C-section. Like, too much, man.
No, it was horrible. Like, I feel like the reason she left the hospital was to rest, not to get distressed with not only having to see everyone, not having to feel self-conscious about, well, I just delivered a baby and anyone coming over, I'm like, okay, let me like freshen up, right? You're not lended that opportunity because they've literally not told you it's happening. You're trying to get some shut eye. That's not happening. And everyone is out here piping up on how you should be raising your son. And it's like, well, how about I sleep one night on it before I give you a definitive answer? How about that? How about I don't have to answer to you right now whilst I'm in this excruciating pain and I've still got hospital on me? How about that, Auntie 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5? How about that?
You can just tell she was just so exhausted and like, not down for this. Like, why are you here? Why are you talking to me right now? Like, leave me alone.
Please. Please leave me alone. It's too much.
And it would be to Binyam, like, yo, this is your family. Like, tell them to back off for a minute. Like, she obviously doesn't feel comfortable saying something like that. But I'm sure he would be like, you know, let's give it a moment. Like, let's not everybody come over all at once. Let's not slaughter a sheep in front of my American, you know, baby mama. She's probably not really down for that. Like, I don't know whether he is just kind of like, I kind of compared Binyam to, like, I don't know if you watch Saturday Night Live, but there's a character on there named Chad, played by Pete Davidson.
Okay.
Like, anyone that anyone says, he's like, yeah, okay. That's all he says, basically. To anybody that's like having a complex conversation with him, his response is always like, okay. Like, that's how I always felt Binyam was, like, yeah, no problem. Sure. Yep. Just doesn't say much. And I'm sure there's a reason for that because of the language barrier.
Right. I mean, I kind of get that. I see what you're saying was what I meant to say, because I find with him, he just doesn't seem like he's putting himself in her shoes. He's not taking her perspective, because to me, at no point has Ari ever shown to be like, I want this, this, and this. Like, everything he did from the minute she left the hospital, she doesn't vibe with. When she's in that room getting grilled by the family, I would have assumed he would understand, like, she doesn't like this. Let me kick them out of that room. Like, she doesn't need to deal with this. Like, But he just let it happen. He just completely let it happen. And then, you know, doesn't talk about it later. Because I think to me, he kind of plays off like an Asuelu mixed with the character you just described. It's a, I can't think of this. I'm not mature enough to like realize this. But yes, we'll do that. Yes, that's fine. Because the next scene we saw with them after that, when they decided we're going to name the baby Avi, was him feeling so happy and so blessed that he gets to have a second chance at a family that he was okay with naming the baby Avi. And I thought that was a very sweet gesture, and I love that. But then also all these other things he's doing where I'm like, do you recognize who your wife is? Who, like, what is going on here? Do you comprehend or no?
But I kind of felt like he took that name thing as like a transactional type of thing. Like, all right, I'll give you this if you give me the baptism and religion.
Yes, I totally took it as that as well. It was like, well, now that you said this, okay, how about we do the baptism? How about we do the baptism and the circumcision? Because I will say this, and I'm not going to say this lightly, he turned into a big old dick when they went to do the checkup after the first week. Because
no, as soon as that baby came out, like to me, like a flip switched in him, and it was like he's now like totally controlling. Like he's like, he tells her at one point, like, "Oh, I'll make the decision for you." Like, whoa.
Yeah. Yeah. When she was like, "Oh, I'm not sure I want to do this." He's like, "Well, I'll make the decision. Don't worry about that." And I was like, excuse me? Like, that's a thing you think you're going to be able to do? Because I, on the second rewatch is when I actually realized what happened. Because when we watched it yesterday, I watched it with no note taking, nothing. So I watched it today on faster speed for note taking. And I didn't catch that they didn't go to the hospital for the purposes of circumcision. They went to the hospital for a checkup and maybe vaccines, and he tried to get the circumcision in there as well.
But she seemed okay with it at first. And she even talked about, like, she would rather it be done by a surgeon than, like, you know, by a, which we would think would be the way she preferred, a traditional Jewish bris. But she was like, no, I'd rather have it done by a surgeon. But I think the fact that, you know, I'm obviously not a, like, mother that's birthed a child, but in seeing your child get needles and all that stuff is like, I think that really got to her. And like, that's what made her kind of flip the switch. Like, I don't want all this happening to my baby right now today. Like, let's not torture him and make him do all this today.
Yeah. Like, I think that none of them wanted to give the other one the victory, because I do think that she mentioned quite a few times of like, I want it to be my son's choice, which in my head, I was like, the idea of a circumcision past the age of like 5 just
seems, yeah, that's not good.
Yikes. Like, you don't want that. But I did feel like she was very conflicted on wanting to do it. And she had initially like kind of left it open ended of like, yeah, it may, you know, surgeon is better, like trying to find the good parts of it. And then I think his attitude mixed with the vibes at the hospital, she was like, you know what? No, I'm not going to do this. Now, I think that this is one of those things where she hasn't fully decided and maybe wants her family involved before she does it. So I thought ultimately I completely understood why she left with the baby. I did not really understand it initially on the first watch, but then on the second watch it was like, no, she doesn't want to put the baby through more stuff. She doesn't want to deal with, she already feels like she's losing this baby to all these decisions that are being overridden for her. So she was like, no, well this is a talk for another day. I'm leaving with the baby.
And to tell you that, like, she, a few times in the episode, she turned the baby as my baby.
She doesn't not, she always says my baby. It doesn't matter how, when, it's always my baby. And I have noticed that from like 2-3 episodes ago, and it's uncomfortable.
You're just like, oh, this does not bode well for how this is going to end up. Like, I can see, like, I'm taking my baby to America. Like, this is over. I'm out.
Right.
I definitely see that happening like that, especially with all the things that's, with a flip that was switched in Binium, like,
yeah,
he's getting way too out of control. And it seemed, it kind of felt to me like he was like, he kind of treated her like, hey, you're the vessel for my child. Thank you so much. Like, now this is going to be my baby. Like, I can, you know, through the episode, I was like, you know, Binium, I kind of see why you haven't seen your first kid in 2 years. Like, if you were this controlling with your other baby mother, like, kind of seeing how that's gonna go.
Well, and I do think that I think Binium, like, she doesn't want Binium to have to go through that again, for sure. So she's gonna try her best. But I also kind of see what's like what Binium doing is very wrong to me.
Yeah.
Because I, again, like I can't, the, what I've started being able to do, which I didn't initially, I'm starting to be able to separate the fact that, hey, Ari is definitely more of a spoiled person growing. She's clearly had everything she wanted growing up. She doesn't understand the value of a dollar in Ethiopia versus the value of a dollar in the state. She doesn't really understand like the standards of living are different. This is different. That is different. She can't handle that. That I've, you know, we've talked about it. I've roasted her for it. That's fine. Now that they've passed that, I think that Ari, what Ari's dealing with is a lot worse than what I initially thought. I do think that she needs, I don't know. We know what we do know, Jason, is that there's going to be a scene at some point where her family is going to be sitting with his family and they're going to be arguing about this baptism thing again. So I think she needs that. She needs someone there to be on her side, because right now she's getting completely steamrolled in the raising of her own son. And it sounds like, well, I got them to name my son and now I have to do everything else the way he wants, which is not going to fly.
And don't think it went past me that she named the baby like Aviella. Like, I think she just wants to be like, this is Avi and I'm Ari. Like,
yeah. She
gets older. Like,
I definitely think the Avi and Ari was very obvious to me of like, yep, she got the name. Cause like, didn't he want to name the son Gabriel?
Yeah. And she's like, I don't have anyone calling him Gabe. Like,
yeah.
Okay. What's wrong with Gabe?
I feel like Gabe isn't a bad short form. I feel like there's worse short forms out there for names. So, right. Yeah. But no, I don't have anything else to say on this. I just have to wait. We just have to wait and see what happens with them next. But I wanted it to be known that at the moment, the pendulum has swung and I am Team Ari over Team Binium until further notice.
I went back and forth the whole, like their whole segments, like,
yeah,
between the both of them. And I think once, Janice comes back and gets her hooks back into Ari, like it's going to be no time before Ari's back in America.
Yeah. And honestly, I'm starting to feel more like they have a son together, but I'm starting to feel more like you guys are not made for one another. Like in the not like as strongly against as the Yazan and Brittany, where they're not made for each other. But I'm starting to notice there's definitely things that neither of them want to compromise on. And that's going to be a problem down the line. Raising a kid, you have there's with raising a family, having a family, having a relationship, compromises are one of the things you need to accept are going to be a part of the package, and you have to be able to work through them. Otherwise, you're doomed to fail.
Yeah, like, and she can't even really compromise without, like, putting him down a little bit. Because, like, when they were talking about the baptism, she's like, well, you know, it's pretty silly, but I'll let you do it.
She didn't need to say that.
Which is where I would have ended up, because in things like that, I'm just like, okay, well, it's just a baptism, like, it's just putting water on his head. Like, it's not anything crazy, but you didn't have to go through the route of insulting his religion. Like,
right. No, and I've had, I saw someone back in university who was like, oh, it's insane the way you guys fast and you don't eat or drink anything the whole day. I'm like, I'm sorry, but it's just, it's part of the religion. Like, it's the thing people have been doing for years. So I'm sorry if it inconveniences you. And I wasn't even practicing at the time. So I was like, I don't know why do you have to run me through this when I'm not even doing it? So yeah.
Thank you for your opinion. No one asked for.
Right. It's like, I appreciate you. Yeah. I don't know where we go from here. All I know is that it's going to get a lot harder with them before it gets better. And that's just what we're being set up for by the looks of it.
100%.
Yeah. Well, and that brings us to the end of the journey with episode 17. We've wrapped everything up. We've talked about what to expect. Just to quickly recap what the next time on stuff had, Devin and Jihoon are going to have the cheating on me conversation. Brittany's going to be leaving to Jordan. Kenny and Armando are going to be going through the application for the marriage license. And there's a scene where it says that they're going to have to get a negative answer. We don't necessarily know if that's going to be a, you're not getting it, because the 90 Day loves fooling us with that. We're going to see a
scene where she was like, deny.
Right. Well, the stamp could be approved, right? A negative answer of like, well, it'll take 90 days to get it, but you're getting it. Like, that could be it. Cause it didn't seem like we're saying no. We have to give you a negative answer. Seems very vague to me.
Yeah. Classic TLC.
Right. And then we're going to have Sumit talking to his dad, and then the Ari and Binium fight's going to happen. And who would we be if we did not end the show where we started with Cheese Stick and Maylisa and the mom awkwardness that will definitely ensue. So, Jason, I had a delight talking to you today, man. Where can people find you? And any other plugs you want to make before we head out?
I am on Twitter at JR1085. That's JAYR1085. I don't tweet often, but when I tweet, you better believe it's good.
I love that. I love that. I'm the same. I used to be a big, like, 100 tweets a day type guy way back when, like 10 years ago. And then now I'm like, no, when I tweet, it better be fire. Otherwise, I'm not utilizing my time correctly. So
we only take compliments. We don't take complaints. So be warned.
Oh, love that. you can find me on social media, Twitter, Instagram, twitch.tv, Puyaism for all three. Now we've wrapped up episode 17 of 90 Day. I will be back on another podcast soon talking about Masked Singer. Episode 5, it's the start of Group C, and I'm very excited to break all that down with Liana Boris. That'll be coming out soon. And Big Brother is over. I had the honor of hosting the finale recap the other night. You can check that out over on the Big Brother channel before all is said and done. And then if you are interested in the game of Among Us, I've been hosting a stream every week, Sunday, 5 Eastern. And I've been bringing people, familiar faces from the RHAP universe that you might know. So definitely come check that out. We broke our record last week. We played for 8 hours. It's just been very easy to do. So make sure to check that out if that's something you might be interested in. Now, until next time, we're at the destination. We're going to get off here, off the Hot Mess Express. Take care. Have a good one. And always be a Hannah. Never be a Brittany. Take care, everybody.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.